With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Ukrainian Football Podcast. A big thank you to always at Stell at Shoot the Defence for giving us the platform to get our messages out to the wider world. We're celebrating today. News has come through. We've been hitting our 5,000 download mark. So thank you, everyone, who has been listening and joining in on the fun that we've been having putting these out over the last 5 or 6 months.
Special episode today. We've got lots lined up for you. Andrew from
Zorya Londance, great to have you here again as always, mate. How's things with you?
Good evening, good morning, whenever you're listening. All's good, and I'm looking forward to another great episode.
Yeah, great to have you here, mate. And the king of North Kiev, the city is always green, isn't it, Ray?
The north part of it definitely is. Hello, everyone. Great to be here. Pleasure to discuss one more exciting day of Ukrainian football.
Aye, great as always to have you here. And a special welcome to our guest this evening, Dima Rebrov. Dima, it's great you took time out of your schedule to join us today, mate. How are you?
Yeah, I'm all good, thanks. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for having me.
You're more than welcome. It's a pleasure to have you here. We're going to start off the show, though, tonight with a little bit of sad news. Confirmation has come through today about the Ukraine-Switzerland game. Andrew, you've got a brief summary of what's been going on there for us, haven't you?
Yeah, so I mean, last week, the UEFA Council confirmed that Ukraine had been forfeited the game against Switzerland 3-0 due to, you know, reasons that they didn't really state, but they said that Ukrainian Association of Football wasn't able to fulfill the fixture, which they ultimately didn't, and as such they've been handing a 3-0 forfeit. It's going the Ukrainian Association of Football, UAF, are taking it to CAS, so Court for Arbitration of Sport. That's also in Switzerland, so 50-50 on whether that's going to bring anything positive, but ultimately, you know, the chances are pretty low, I think, of Ukraine getting anything too good out of this, which is actually a real shame and obviously very controversial. So, you know, unfortunate.
It is unfortunate, but I like to be known as a positive sort of guy, looking for the silver lining, even in this Swiss mess that we've landed ourselves in. Dropping into League B, correct me if I'm wrong, the next Nations League is in the run-up to Euro 2024. 2024. Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah, I think it's going to be in the autumn of 2022.
So just before
the Euro qualifying campaign starts in 2023.
So would that fill you, Ray? Would it fill you with more optimism that Ukraine could see greater success in League B, and perhaps it gives another route open for qualification to the next tournament when we're going to be taking on weaker opposition? Or would you have preferred to have stayed in League A?
I would always prefer to stay in Division A, as it's much more fancier, and just we can get much more experience from it, as we can prove ourselves, we can vary our style of play, and we can play strong teams like we beat Spain, and we looked quite decent against Germany, which was beaten by Spain as well. So it's thrilling, to say the least, and it's absolutely inappropriate for me to see the national team in Group B or lower. So I hope it's going to be sorted sooner or later.
Fingers crossed. We're not optimistic, obviously. It does seem, we'll be perfectly honest, my opinion is it's been an absolute fix and a farce on UEFA's behalf. The whole situation seems a dirty mess and has set a precedent. And I've seen a couple of comments that, well, hey, you know, when Real Madrid are coming to play Shakhtar this week, well, why don't we put them all into quarantine and take a 3-0 win ourselves? You know, that's something along those lines. Dima, what's been your take on this whole mess?
Yeah, of course, I agree with everything that's been said. It's been a bit of a fix, unfair towards Ukraine, I think. It's a strange decision how the Swiss doctor had the power to put the whole team into quarantine. So I feel like with League B, we'll go back to how it was a few years ago with Czech Republic and Slovakia, or Slovenia, was it, in our group, where we got promoted. I certainly have confidence that whatever group they'll have in League B, I think Ukraine will be favourites to get promoted back up to League A. But it is a shame. It would have been nice to play against the big teams like Germany and Spain over the last year or so, but I guess that's the situation.
It is. Anyway, moving on, we don't want to dwell on it too much. We got lots of positive and good things to talk about tonight. We had a busy weekend of Ukrainian football. Dima, you watched the Dynamo game. What was your take on it? Very important match at the top of the table there.
Yeah, I expected a pretty tough game for Dinamo. I think Vorskla only conceded 6 goals in 10 games or something. They had the best defence in the league going into the game. But I think the first half was very comfortable. The game was decided in the first half. Obviously, Tsigankov getting the early goal. Then another goal ruled out for offside with Depena. It was a very nice team move from Dinamo, which was obviously ruled out. But then second goal and another goal before half-time, which another penalty which could have been given before half-time, but was not given because of VAR and an offside in the build-up. But yeah, it was a very comfortable game. Second half, Vorskla didn't really create much, and I don't think Dinamo's lead was ever really in doubt. There was the red card at the end for Zabarny, which I thought was very controversial. His foot kind of got stuck in the ground as he made the tackle, and yeah, I don't know if I'd have given the red card if I was the VAR referee, but it was a comfortable win for Dinamo, and obviously they keep the lead over Shakhtar on the table, thankfully.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, very happy to take the points. Andrew, did you have a quick look at the game as well? Anything you wanted to add in there? You seem to be itching at the bit.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to add that I think Vorskla are really disappointed. To be honest, everyone was expecting them maybe to put a bit more of a fight in like they did in that cup final. But I guess because of the lack of cup final credibility of the game, sort of, you know, that intensity, it just never showed. And ultimately, like Dima said, they didn't threaten at all really throughout the game. Maybe that was because they were without Kulac up top or something like that. But, you know, Kane had quite a poor game as well. Ultimately got sent off at the very end, which is sort of another, you know, mark on his record and the fact that Vorska want to sell him, but he's already got two red cards inside, you know, 10 games this season. So, you know, how many games is that missing and et cetera, et cetera. So if they want 1.6 million or whatever, however much they wanted for him, I guess they'll be, you know, finding it hard to do that in the near future. And just to add to Dynamo, I think someone who really stood out for me was Bogdan Lednev. He came on in the second half. He looked probably his best game for Dynamo since returning from Zorya. Really good. Had a few shots, had a great free kick that was cleared off the line. Hopefully he can get back to his best and show more of that. And I mean, in terms of the calibre of the game, okay, it wasn't against Shakhtar or anything, but it was against, you know, the third best team in the league. So hopefully he can build on that. But we'll see.
Am I right? Correct me if I'm wrong here, guys. He's Lednev's in the squad for Juventus coming up this week. Is that right, Andrew? You're nodding there?
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure he is, as far as I'm aware.
With Boyatsky being out for a few weeks, what do you think the chances are of him getting a start in Italy?
I personally think quite low. He obviously did impress, but I think he's going to go for the tried and tested Harmash.
Fair enough. Dima, what's been your take of the European campaign so far?
Well, I think for Dynamo, it couldn't really have gone much better. I think to make it into the group stage is a massive achievement. When you look at the last few years, obviously playing in the Europa League, to make it through the qualifying rounds, I think was a very good achievement. And in the group stage itself, to get Juventus and Barcelona, again, it's very difficult to compete against such top teams. When you look at the Dynamo team, it's quite young, inexperienced, obviously at Champions League level. So I think to obviously I've got the point away at Ferencvaros with the home game to come in the last round. I don't really think Dynamo could have realistically expected for much better at this stage.
Obviously, you mentioned the game coming up in, what is it, nine days' time. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, very excited. Obviously, I was looking forward to the first game in Budapest. I had probably a slight kind of edge towards Ferencváros. So it was nice for them to have got the point in the end, complete a comeback. And I'm looking forward to the game next week, obviously, which is going to be the decider for who's going to get that Europa League spot. Obviously, a big round of games as well this Wednesday with Dynamo away at Juventus and Ferencváros at home against Barcelona. And obviously, either of the two can get an advantage going into the last game. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
What's been the sort of the attitude in Budapest towards the group stage campaign? People there happy with Ferencváros's performances?
Yeah, over the moon. I mean, the qualifiers, they had a very difficult kind of path to the group stage. Obviously, drawing Celtic away in the second round was almost a write-off before the game was played. Then Dinamo Zagreb in the third round last season, they faced Dinamo Zagreb at the same stage and lost 4-0 at home. And that wasn't a massive surprise then. So this season to go and win that game 2-1 was obviously a big step forward and shows the progress that the team has made. And I think in the group stage itself, again, similar to Dynamo, it's very difficult to expect Ferencváros to compete against Juventus and Barcelona. But obviously last week, to concede a 92nd minute winner against Morata was very disappointing, but they played extremely well that game. And I'm fairly positive of them maybe getting a result against Barcelona. Again, Barcelona playing the kind of second team like they did against Dynamo. Maybe at home they could pick up a point like they could have done against Juventus. So yeah, it's been very positive in Hungary. The fans are just happy to be a part of the group stage, to be playing in the Champions League. It's a huge achievement for the club and the whole country.
Definitely. I can see Andrew and Ray both nodding along there, guys. I know you've got some questions for Dima. Ray, anything you'd like to ask there?
Probably the only question would be, which team do you fancy more, Dinamo or Ferencváros?
I would think that Dinamo will be favourites, especially playing at home in the last game. I'd be quite surprised if they don't pick up the result they need. It will probably be more likely that Dinamo would go through with a draw. That's obviously if Ferencvaros don't pick up a result against Barcelona on Wednesday. And yeah, I'd be surprised if Dinamo don't go through. It would be a shock, I think, if Ferencvaros get the win in Kiev. When you compare the two squads, I think Dinamo have a much stronger team, much more depth in the squad as well. I think you look at the COVID cases at Dinamo when they went away to Barcelona with so many players out, and they still played a brilliant game and almost picked up a point away at Barcelona with so many players out. So yeah, I'd support Ferencvaros slightly, but I think Dinamo will be the favourites to qualify.
Definitely. Thank you, Andrew. Over to you there.
Yeah, sure. Dimas, so any players to watch out for? I know obviously we can remember Tokmak from the first game, but anyone else that you think maybe has progressed since that first game, or someone that Dinamo should be, you know, being a bit wary of?
Yeah, you mentioned Tokmak. He's definitely the standout player. He's the one probably star player that I'd say that Ferencvaros have. He obviously got the goal in Budapest, and the whole of this season he's been the leader. He's scored 6 goals in the league, I think, in 8 games. Throughout the qualifiers he was the main man. He got the winner against Celtic. I think Blažić, the centre back, Miha Blažić, is probably the leading defender. I think all of last season he was kind of the one player who played in all the league games pretty much, and all the European games. Of course, the two Ukrainians, Subkov and Haratin, have been leading players ever since they joined, with both of them. Zubkov's been slightly kind of out of form this season for club. He's not been brilliant, but Haratian is very much the first choice midfielder for him. But yeah, I think all the attackers, Azuni, Mirto Azuni, the winger, who was signed this summer from Lokomotiv Zagreb, is a very good player as well. He got the goal against Juventus. In terms of other names, it's more of a kind of collective, a group effort to get them this far. I don't think there's necessarily any individuals which the team relies on. It's more of a kind of collective group effort. So yeah,
like Ukraine national team.
Yeah, exactly.
I just want to touch on something there, Dima. You mentioned the two Ukrainian boys who've been there for, you know, a while now. Would you feel, having watched a lot of the Hungarian league, and I know you do, would you recommend it to other Ukrainian players to come across? We've seen a lot coming, or would you perhaps suggest other leagues when you compare the UPL and the Hungarian league? How do they sit quality-wise?
I think quality-wise, they're not too dissimilar. When you look at the top teams in Ukraine, I'd say Shakhtar and Dinamo are slightly above Ferencvaros and Videoton, who are the top two teams in Hungary. But I think you look at the rest of the league, and if I was to say compare in Ukraine, Oleksandria, Jasna, Zorya, to Hungary's Újpest, Honved, Puskás Academy, I don't think there's a massive difference in quality. And there have been quite a few Ukrainian players moving to Hungary. I know Borechuk joined Mezukovesh in the summer from Shakhtar, I think, on loan. I think it's a good league for players to develop. I think Petrak as well, who went to Ferencvaros on loan a couple of seasons ago, has now gone to Videoton and is doing pretty well there as well. I think he's a great player. And obviously Haratin and Zubkov have progressed massively since they've joined. They've now got call-ups to the national team, which before they joined Ferencvaros, I don't think anyone was talking about them as candidates for the national team. So yeah, I think if Ukrainian players have the opportunity to go to Hungary, if they have offers, I think for them it's potentially a great opportunity to prove themselves in a different environment, to move out of their comfort zone.
Well, one final question from me. I'm going to jump in before the other boys do. But what's been the take, you know, in the Rebrov household of Dinamo under Luchescu this season?
For me, when the original news broke, it was very, well, surprised, obviously, as everyone was. I took it quite negatively, and even now it's still, I'm not too keen on the appointment. Just ever since I've started watching football, Lucescu has been the face of Shakhtar. He's been, you could say, the enemy of Dinamo. So yeah, for me, it's tough to take, but the results have been great. You know, he's proven to be a good appointment. Team's getting results on the pitch. Obviously, top of the league, into the Champions League group stage as well. But yeah, it is difficult to take. Obviously, the Cesc being manager of Dinamo is something, you know, 10 years ago you'd say would happen. It would be just crazy to think of that, but it is what it is, and hopefully you can obviously get Dinamo back up to the level of, you know, a few years ago, and the next man who will come in after him will take over Dinamo in a better position than they were, you know, this summer.
Definitely. Thank you for that. Thank you for that. Moving on, obviously, you know, you said, saying there about Lucescu being the face of Shakhtar for so many years. I had the pleasure, shall we say, of watching the Shakhtar game on Saturday. It feels like it was a lifetime ago already. I've tried to banish it to the distant memories. It was a pretty poor affair. Dnipro did seem to pack out the defence a bit and give Shakhtar a lot of the ball. Shakhtar, they had a number of chances, but the finishing just wasn't there on match day. It was a, if I just check my notes very carefully, it was in, right in the last couple of minutes where Kravchenko missed his clearance from the cross before Tete smashed it in from 12 yards. This was after endless chances. Dobrik for Dnipro, he had a few chances to get a goal for Dnipro, but missed those in the second half. I do want, before we move on a little bit, to touch on a Dnipro player who made his second start for Dnipro this year. Young Igor, who is a player I obviously have mentioned a number of times before, most notably because he's not going to turn 17 until next March, and he's already been in and around the first team at Dnipro since the start of 2020. Didn't have a bad game, you know. He's still a boy playing a man's game, and he's got a lot of growing up to do, both mentally as well as physically. Rumours are coming through now that Leipzig are interested in him. I see, Ray, you're nodding along there. Personally, from my knowledge of the scouting world, I think most scouts around Europe will be keeping an eye on his progress already. When a 15-year-old, as he was, starts making first-team appearances for a Ukrainian Premier League team, most decent scouting units will be keeping an eye on his progress, and it won't be long. You know, it may be Dima that he ends up in the Hungarian League in the not future. But I know, I think the plans are down in Dnipro for him to move when he's 18. But Shakhtar are welcoming Real Madrid in about 24 hours' time. The game will be well underway. I did know this, but since the half-time of the game in the Bernabeu, back in, when was it, the start of October, early end of September, since that half-time, they've conceded 12 goals and scored none in the Champions League, which is pretty horrific, absolutely horrific. After those three goals in the first 45 minutes when everyone was dreaming of great success, it's gone horrifically wrong. We were having a discussion a couple of days ago about how bad it is going. It seemed almost the game last week against Mönchengladbach at times, against Boys, it was as if Shakhtar didn't know what they're doing. And Real Madrid have found themselves since that first game. They've won both the games against Inter Milan. And it's going to take something special. It's going to take Shakhtar to find themselves again, the old Shakhtar that we all knew and hated with a passion, to find themselves if they're going to get anything out of the game, in my opinion. Ray, have you got a prediction? I'm going to say 2-0 to Real.
I'm not strong at precise predictions. I would just say that Castro does not need to put veterans in the squad. I mean, Tyson Marlos can move on as a sub because we remember his chip over Courtois in Madrid game on Di Stefano Stadium. That was actually something which made me realize that we kind of need naturalization for such things to see something like that happening, even though it was offside. So, we know that he used the reserves for that game, which really impressed all of us, this win against Real Madrid. He should keep up to that, you know? I know it's almost impossible as they had COVID cases back then. But also Castro himself seems like he lost some confidence. You know, it's been a lot of his interviews recently that, you know, it doesn't add much to the team mentality. So, yeah, nothing. I wouldn't be that optimistic, honestly.
Andrew, any predictions?
Yeah, I mean, just based on their recent performances where, I mean, against that Borussia Mönchengladbach, the 4-0 win, you could probably say that was even worse than the 6-0. Just because they had all their first team back. They mixed a bit of, you know, Tete and Solomon in there. But ultimately, they were just completely, they did nothing in that game at all. So, yeah, it's difficult to see. And I mean, that was only a week ago. So what's improved since then? They didn't play very well against Dnipro 1. Bear in mind, they had, you know, some reserves out in that game. But yeah, I don't know. I think they might get a goal, but 2-1, 3-1 Real is my sort of opinion because I think Real just know that they need to come and get something. And yeah, it's one of those.
Dima, do you agree with the boys or do you got a bit more optimism?
I'll agree with the majority. I'd be very surprised if Shakhtar get a result, to be honest. Their form in Europe and in Ukraine hasn't been very impressive last month or so. So it's a big game for Real as well. Obviously, they need the win. And I'd be surprised. I'll go over 3-1 Real, maybe 3-0 Real. I think it'll be pretty comfortable for them.
Before we move on to Zorya, though, there's one little thing I'd like to discuss with you boys. Is, as Ray said there, some of the older Brazilian guys. Is it time now for Shakhtar to move on? You know, is it time for a new Shakhtar? We talked about the reserves that played there. Great game in the Bernabeu. I've been championing Sudakov, you know, for the last month or so, and he's not getting games. There's a lot of these young boys who aren't getting games. Do you feel like me, and I'm going to put my hat on it and say I'd like to see some of these young talents that are coming through getting more game time, and is it time to say goodbye to some of the older boys at Shakhtar? I see, Andrew, maybe you disagree with me there.
They got the good result that first half against Real. But then you look at the Inter game. Okay, they drew 0-0, but they were very lucky. Inter were well off their finishing that day. Lukaku was, you know, had a particularly bad game. And then the majority of them all started against Mönchengladbach in the 6-0. And I mean, that was like baptism of fire brought down to earth. So I think there needs to be a mix at the moment. There's some sort of transition period needs to go on, but I just don't think that Castro's found the correct balance for that at the moment. He needs to sort of work out exactly what's going on there. Tyson, for one, I think he's still got a lot in the bank, probably a couple more years in Europe, but I just don't think his head's there. He's wanted to leave Shakhtar for years. They just haven't let him, or for whatever reason. And I think that's just completely done his, you know, mental strength in terms of what he wants to give to the team. Whereas Marlos is probably the opposite. He's got a lot to give still, I think, in terms of sort of what he wants to give. But just physically, you can see he's got no pace left. He just can't physically do it. So, yeah, I guess it would be good to see the likes of Sudakov, etc., get given a go. But I mean, they're not out of Europe just yet. And if they can scrape that, UCL spot, then see what happens after in the new year. But for now, I think it's just got to be all guns blazing. But you really don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, everyone's fearing for the worst in terms of they'll just finish fourth. And then they can rebuild, I guess, straight off, because there won't be anything else to hold them back.
Very true. Very true. Ray Deemer, have you got an opinion on it?
I think, like Andrew said, there's got to be some kind of mix. If you're going to go with kind of full youth and have like 7 or 8 young Ukrainian players in the lineup, there'll be no chance to compete in Europe in the Champions League. Tyson, Marlos, Ismaili, Patrick, they're all, you know, experienced players. They all have the quality, as they've shown the last few years. So it's tough. They've got to find the right mix in terms of kind of keeping their experienced players in order to obviously have the success on the pitch, and also to kind of blood in the new young quality players. And obviously Shakhtar have good young quality players in their academy. So yeah, it'd be nice to see more of them. Maybe in the Ukrainian league domestically, you kind of give more chances to them. And then in Europe, you kind of go for the more reliable players. But yeah, it's kind of a tough mix to try and find the right middle ground.
This is exactly what I was thinking when I looked at the lineup for the Dnipro game. It was just so disappointing. You know, I was expecting a lot of the guys from last week to have been rested and some of the young blood to get given a lot more game time. But hey-ho, we move on.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Now it's time to talk about Zorya after their great result in Greece. Andrew, how did that go?
Yep, good 3-0 win against AEK. Sort of unprecedented. Weren't expecting too much from them. And thanks to Ukrainian Yevhen Shakhov for AEK, he got sent off just inside the second half. Zorya steamed home to a 3-0 comfortable win. And the fate of their European destiny is just about still in their hands if they can get 2 wins in those final 2 matches. However, there was no Europa League hangover in the UPL. They went straight to Uzhhorod, snowy Uzhhorod. Lots of snow on the camera, etc. Against Minai. Minai weren't that good, personally. Zorya, you know, they had the golfing class showed. Kocherhin got a nice goal, finishing a rebound through the legs of Kanabalotsky after Hromov, classically one-on-one straight at the keeper. And it just shows that, you know, when Kocherhin can somehow nuts the keeper, how good he is compared to some of his peers. Then there was a Kanabalotsky howler who came for a free kick. Ivan Asenya, free header into the goal. And then finally, Kocherhin, nice work, cut across the goal and easy tap in for Hladky. So overall, you know, great performance there. I guess it bodes well for Leicester, especially, you know, if they bring a weakened side, etc. But overall, a good 3 points and sort of puts Zorya back on track with a bit of form. Hopefully that they can take into the end of the year with the winter break. And just commenting on Kocherhin, he's just today been linked with Dynamo Kyiv in January. So he apparently was linked with Wolfsburg in the summer, so slight downgrade, but we'll see what happens when it comes to it. The only issue I have with it is, where would he fit in? Would he be a starter? I don't think he personally would, especially with Bielski and Shaparenko in that team. He's probably not quick enough to be a winger instead of Depena or someone like that. So I'd probably recommend, if he did have offers from Europe somewhere, probably go there first before anything at Dynamo. But yeah.
Thanks for that. Ray, you had the joys of Alexandria Rook, I believe.
That was a real treat, as that's what, why we love Ukrainian football so much, honestly. Hit and run, classic. Although both teams have great players in their squads, all we witnessed is Babohlo from Alexandria, who is a star of recently graduated Ukrainian national under 21, and also Kukharevich from Ruch. I was really delighted to see him going on as a sub. However, both of those guys didn't show much of action and extravaganza, so to speak, nil-nil. Alexandria is looking forward to face Kolos, which would be a vital game for staying in the middle of UPL. And Ruch is in the bottom of the league, fighting with fellow brothers in crime FC Lviv, which I obviously and honestly would rather see on the last position of the league. And Alexandria, they are a good team with their own fans, with their ground and their, you know, like family type of club. And I would fancy them staying as high as possible, although we know that they can really struggle with their playing style or like in that game. So looking forward to performing well from their side.
Thanks for that. And you mentioned the FC Lviv there. I saw them take on the Shakhtar's reserves. Sorry, I meant to say Mariupol on Friday night. Yeah, you mentioned the golfing class between Minai and Zorya, and the same golfing class is between Lviv and it is Shakhtar's almost under 21 team, as it was on Friday night. Just an endless amount of lone players. That's a whole other discussion that we can have on another day. But one of them, Danny Sagan, got the first goal. It was a nice header, I thought, actually. Quite a confident finish, and it was something that I was worried about with him. And then Mishnov, I hope I pronounced his name right. Please don't hate me if I didn't. But that was a great finish from a Ocherenko cross. Now, this boy, he's an interesting character, isn't he? At 17 years old now, and only got sent down from Shakhtar this season. He moved down at the end of September. He has played for their under-21s this year. Third start, and a goal and assist. He got the third goal. It was an empty net. Great counter-attack move in the second half. Mariupol took their foot off the gas in the second half. They had over 70% possession in the first half, and it really eased off. Lviv got a late consolation through Mubi. I hope I've got his name wrong, a Tunisian centre-half that's come across recently. Very poor goalkeeping by Kudryk, yet another Shakhtar loanee in goal, who's been coming as reserve goalie, covering the injured guy there, whose name escapes me at the moment. And yet another, am I right, Shakhtar loanee in Czech? Getting, or is he? He is another loanee, crikey. It's like spot the official player in the Mariupol lineup these days. But his red card, I think it was well deserved. It was a pretty horrific challenge towards the end there. And hopefully it'll be something that he learns about in his development. But Ocherenko, that boy looks like a little talent to keep an eye on in the future. So he's still only 17 and starting to put some performances in at man's level, as I like to say. Anyway, that's me done with the joy of Friday night. Where are we going next? Kolos, shall we, Andrew?
Yeah, sure. Well, this was just marred in controversy, really. Finished 1-1. First off, Lissenkos scored a penalty after a Mostovy handball. But it was one of those, you know, the ones you see in the Premier League and other places where it sort of like bounced off the ground, off his chest, and then somehow like bounced into his arm. So it was like completely, like almost impossible to predict or control. And yeah, the ref just didn't even hesitate. He saw it and he just gave it straight away. Pretty harsh, but I mean, I guess with the new rules, that gets given. Lissenkos penalty post and in. Bit of a Yarmolenko one against Poland, the one that he missed, but right side of the post this time. Then there was a VAR review for another handball, but this time in Kolos's end. And that was another one where it was pretty nonsensical. Volonets came and punched the ball. He punched it and it sort of like looped and hit the arm on the way out of a player who wasn't even looking. He was looking the other direction. So obviously, I guess it was in an unnatural position. I don't know. Everyone was jumping. That was given as a penalty after a VAR review. And Budkivsky finished it. Nice penalty. Then, second half, Konoplya scored a wonderful goal. He was played in with a crossfield ball over the top, down the right, you know, inside the box, but quite an acute angle. He just powered it way past Volonets in the other corner, but it was disallowed following a VAR review. And it took about 4 minutes, maybe three, for the ref to sort of understand this. And I was watching highlights of this decision, and on football, the YouTube channels, they didn't show the actual VAR review, like watching of it or anything. They just went straight over to Imerikov, who was who's just a centre-back, for handballing it about a good 30 seconds before that, the assist for the goal. So I guess it was in the same passage of play. I don't know, but it was, you know, it just seemed ridiculous that that had any impact on it. Yeah, it was quite farcical. He got booked for that. Hutsulyak played well. Arveladze, who's a bit of a veteran, he really impressed. He had a few shots on goal, but Volonets just wasn't getting beaten after that. Mudrik actually had a bit of a good game as well. He went through, cut it across goal, and Konoplya, unfortunately, right back finish straight at Volonets with his left foot, I think. And yeah, and then right at the very end, Imerikov did a little, put a little hand on Seleznov, got a second yellow and got sent off. So all in all, an awful game from Imerikov, but sort of not really his fault in the slightest. So yeah, quite farcical refereeing. I don't know what goes on at that Kolos-Kovalivka stadium, but there's always some sort of controversy down there. It's weird.
Well, there's not only controversy at the Kolos Stadium, there was also controversy up in Chernihiv as well, wasn't there, Andrew? You got a little bit of information on that for us?
Yep, so if you've been on Twitter over the past week or so, you've probably been seeing a load of sort of like Brexit, Chelsea hardnut accounts retweeting this video of Desna Ultras throwing the stadium director into a bin, similar to things that Ukrainian politicians have been in the past, etc. But yeah, so it's all about the fact that Desna are being apparently threatened with being kicked out of their home stadium, the Gagarin in Chernihiv, over the fact that the new, you know, the Ministry of Sport owns the stadium. And as such, they want to renovate it. And by renovating it, you won't be able to play there. But Desna and the sort of hierarchy at the club don't want to move anywhere, even temporarily to Kyiv or something like that, and say that if they are moved, that it's going to threaten the very existence of their club and that the club could very well fold if that happens. Apparently, Desna have invested over 16 million hryvnia into the stadium and the infrastructure around it. That includes like administrative buildings, hotels. I think they've got a hotel where the players stay and stuff like that, and training complex, etc. And I mean, the stadium is still in quite dire condition, like one whole stand, like the main stand's just been covered since they've come up, and it's been like that for years. And the issue is the fact that they've never owned this stadium. So they've invested all this money into something that they have no ownership of. So it's sort of like, you know, slightly farcical management in that sense as well. So, you know, it's difficult to judge on what's going on here, but the government officials being blamed, who the new director of the stadium, who works for, I think, the Ministry of Sport, he got thrown in the bin. And I think from what Desna used to pay 20,000 hryvnia per match in rent, like per game sort of fee, match fee. And now they're being asked to pay 350,000 hryvnia per match, which is apparently the equivalent of what sort of Lviv Arena, Arena Lviv is the sort of payment. And you also get stewardship, stewards and all the other match day stuff, but here you don't. And that's all sort of, I've got all that source from Tato Taker, who did a bit about it as well. But yeah, it's difficult to see how this is going to end. But I've already seen Desna FC on Facebook, on the official Facebook page, releasing stickers. You know, the stickers you can put in your profile picture. Desna Maya Zhiti, Desna Must Live. So maybe something bad might happen over the winter. But hopefully some agreements come, but you know, bad times.
Well, we can only hope common sense prevails there. I've been to the complex that Desna built, and it is a very impressive complex up there where the players board and the like, because they have spent some money, and it is quite ridiculous that they don't have a say in it. That rental for you quoted is seems absolutely horrific. And just as an aside, it was a similar thing in Lviv that forced Carpati back to Ukraine, and they were getting a much more sensible fee at Ukraine last season. And why Arena Lviv stayed dormant for a few years and no UPL teams were playing there. Anyway, we've digressed a little, gents, and we've forgotten about Ingolets. And I know, Isaac, if you listen to this, you'll be upset about that. Did they manage to get their first win, Ray? Did they? Go on, don't disappoint.
Absolutely. 2-1, 10 plays, 10 points. Safe zone, to be honest, for Ingolets for the debut season in UPL. Quite a quality management from Lavrinenko, their head coach. I would say they're having a pretty good structure build up in the club, as we know their famous president Poworzniuk, not the one playing in Veres, but the older guy, the agricultural businessman, so to speak, from Petrovo. 2-1 win, 2-0 till the end. Zahiri scoring a pen, which allows him to lead the goal scorers race with 6 goals. I wouldn't go so far as telling you how many of them he scored from penalties, but it doesn't mean much, as he is a star player for Olympic, as they had 15 players in their squad for this match, as COVID really went through all the players. Ingolets played quite well. Sichinawa scored his goal after a horrific mistake from the keeper of Olympic. He wasn't the top 11 squad keeper. It was a reserve keeper, and also Bartulovic scored a free kick, which kind of reminded everyone of the famous Ukraine-Russia goal from Shevchenko in 1999. Anyway, it doesn't get any easier for Olympic in this one. Although they are the mid-table team, and they definitely ain't gonna relegate this season, and they're staying in UPL, I can assure you of that. Ingolets would probably fight till the end as well, as I believe in them, as they are they're a good side to watch, and they have decent players. So it was a good game. Congratulations with the win, and stand your ground.
Thanks for that, Ray, as always. Now, moving on, guys. And I do apologise if my microphone dies out at the moment. I'm trying my best here, gents. We've got the World Cup draw coming up next week, haven't we? Is it on Monday, Andrew? Is it a week today?
Yep, Monday the 7th.
Crikey. Okay, well, you set us a little challenge, didn't you, Andrew, beforehand? And we'd love anyone who does listen to this right the way to the bitter end. Let us know what your predictions are and what you'd like to see in the group stage. But Dima, as you are our guest today, we'll let you go first. Have you picked your ideal group and why?
Well, I've not picked it yet, but I've got the list up, so I can do it right now on the spot if you'd like.
Definitely.
So from pot one, I'd probably go with Denmark. But to be honest, even with Denmark, I watched them play against England at Wembley a few months ago, actually, and they picked up a win there. So I don't think Denmark would be a very easy team from pot one. I certainly don't think that would be a easy 6 points for Ukraine by any means. But you look at the other teams in pot one, I'd probably say Denmark. Then from three, probably Iceland, Northern Ireland, maybe Finland. I think there's quite a few teams there in pot three which Ukraine would probably fancy their chances against, and I'd say Iceland to try and get revenge on a few years ago from the World Cup qualifiers. Pot four, Luxembourg maybe to play them again. North Macedonia, not sure about North Macedonia. They might be a decent team. Play them in the Euros as well, but. Yeah, from pot five and six, I think there's a quite similar level. I don't think there's much difference between the teams in pot five and six, and even four. I think they're quite similar in terms of quality, to be honest.
Oh, thanks. Andrew, I'll go to you next.
Yeah, well, I'm not going for the easy route. I'm going for what I want to see. And obviously, as I live in London, England, pot one, there's no doubt about it. Let's go. We've had some good games at Wembley and against England in recent past. Very tight. I think Ukraine could do a job, especially if with the qualifiers starting in March 2021, good warm-up for the Euros. So that's pot one for me. Then pot three, any one of the sort of home nations. So got Republic of Ireland, I'll take Northern Ireland, I'll take Scotland. Who cares? Any of them, just so that I can... So it's a local sort of away game. Pot four, I think there's only one here that... an away day that I definitely want to do. I definitely want to report on. Georgia. I think it's the one that most Ukraine fans want as well. That would be a good one. I wouldn't mind Bosnia as well, although they are probably the pot one seed in pot four. So maybe avoid that. But just the fact that Ukraine have never played Bosnia in their history. So I would like that. And I'd like to see Edin Dzeko as one of my favourite all-time Premier League footballers. So I'd like to see him sort of coming up against Ukraine. I think pot five, Kosovo in that. And ideally, I think Ukraine need to avoid them. Or it might be in pot three. But they need to avoid them because there might be a diplomatic issue. Because I don't think Ukraine recognises Kosovo. And the last time Ukraine played Kosovo in the qualifying, they had to play in a neutral territory, both games. I think one was in Poland and then the away game was in Albania because mutual passports aren't agreed. But since then, I think FIFA/UEFA have done a sort of a official statement where if Ukraine, if a team... rejects a passport or whatever, then the other side gets a 3-0 win. And I mean, Ukraine have already been on the back end of a forfeit recently, so we don't want to build another one. So pot four for me, Kazakhstan or Armenia, get one of those big boys, would be a nice trip and relatively easy. And then pot five, because Ukraine have never played them before and would be a good whipping, Liechtenstein. I'll take that. Maybe Gibraltar, but I think they're on the way up. So just give it Liechtenstein, get some goals for Yarmolenko to catch up with Shevchenko.
Fantastic. Right.
Yeah, just a brief expectation from me. I would like to see the qualification group for World Cup as similar as possible to the one in 2006, which was a lot of post-Soviet Union countries like Georgia, Kazakhstan. We also faced Albania back then, Denmark, and Greece. Although it was a very narrow group, we won it with 23 points, and we also faced Turkey back then. So I would really go with something like that. I would also love to face Bosnia. I would agree with Andrew on that. Apart from that, I wouldn't like to see any top teams in our group, as we need a little break for them, to be honest. So yeah, here we go.
Cheers. Thanks for that. I want to see England and Scotland in the group. I'm going to put my hat straight on it. I'd love. It was one of my favourite memories from my time in Kiev was when England came in 2013, and it was a great week with the England fans there. Just bring a real atmosphere into the city. But the game must be after the COVID implications that restrictions have passed, and we can actually get people into ground. From pot four, gone for personal reasons, Bulgaria or Bosnia, I don't mind which, but we have a couple of football projects coming out in those two countries, and it'd be great to have some banter with the guys that I'm working with in that down there at the moment. Two great football countries as well. I think there'd be some competitive matches. And then again, I've gone for two whipping boys from pot five and pot six. I was impressed to see Andorra have climbed into pot five. Well, I'd love to see us play them, you know. It'd just be great. You know, we've mentioned and we've been talking about it a lot over the weeks, the great young potential coming through. And, you know, as Dima, you said there, it's about getting the balancing act. And games like Andorra and San Marino, a great opportunity for Shevchenko to try some of the younger boys and to see how they cope with the international football. Get a few goals, build up their confidence as well. So I'd love to see those two. That's my predictions. Now, before we go tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we do have the Ukrainian Cup rearing its head again this week or throughout the month, because Zorya have entered at this stage as well. I think when they made the decisions, they were, well, obviously Zorya would have been playing in the group stage anyway. Their games against Chernihiv is just before, in the middle of December at 16th. But this week we've got five games on Wednesday. Neither Vinitsa, happily, have got through at the fourth round. They're hosting Kolos. Let's see if a shot can be pulled off there. VPK Agro are hosting Dnipro in the Dnipro City Derby there. That will be, as they're based in the city this year. Verez are hosting Mariupol. So going to be cheering on Verez on Wednesday lunchtime. Those three games are a 1 o'clock kickoff Ukrainian time, 11 o'clock in the morning in the UK. Then at 2 o'clock, good old Agro business taking on Vorskla. Let's see how many red cards there are in that game and if there's any fights in the changing rooms afterwards. And then finally, at a slightly more reasonable time, 4:30 in the afternoon, Alexandria will host Minoy. So this is the final round before Dinamo and Shakhtar come in. And obviously the ridiculous decision was made to keep them out of the Ukrainian Cup until the quarterfinal. Win three games, you're the cup winners this year. But hey, never mind. So that's it tonight, everyone. Dima, big thank you for joining us. I hope you've enjoyed it as much as we've enjoyed having you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I've enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great. Ray, Andrew, been a pleasure as always. Always love listening to your opinions and the information you've researched out beforehand. Cheers.
Likewise, Adam. Thanks for giving us.
Absolutely.
So, Dima, if people want to get in touch with you, where's the best place for them to find you?
Probably say Twitter. So, DimRev1, D-I-M. REB1. That's probably the best way to contact me.
Fantastic. Ray, same places as always.
seems to be Instagrammable and casual to get in touch with me.
Fantastic. And Andrew, over to you.
Zoria Londonsk on Instagram or Twitter.
And I'm Adam at Ukrafot24. You can find me in most places or under Adam Pate on LinkedIn. Till next time, everybody. We got a special coming out this Thursday, so make sure you're checking your downloads for that. So you're going to be a real view. And say, until then, take care and good night.